This winter has certainly flexed its muscle in terms of cold and snow, but does that mean that global warming isn't really happening? We'll find out about that and a whole lot more as we talk with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Next, they always have a lot of great information to share with you and with me. Steve is the director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, is with me in the studio right now. Great to have you with us, Steve.
It's great to be here.
John Martin will be joining us.
Yes, he's off teaching.
He's still teaching, but he'll be by in 10 minutes or so, and we'll work him into the conversation.
Yeah, right. We should ask him a question as soon as he comes in, because he's always out of breath running over here.
I have to keep something good in mind. Oh, man. Well, meteorological winter is December, January, and February, so we're just days from the end of it.
And I'm sure many people are thinking, thank goodness.
Well, what is the meteorological winter exactly?
So, we define a meteorological winter as the weather conditions during the months of December, January, and February. So it's always that, December for us this year would be 2013, and then January, February, 2014.
Yeah. And you wrote an article for the Wisconsin State Journal about whether this has been an unusual winter or not. Has it been?
It's been an unusual winter in comparison to the last 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. So it's been one of our coldest. We are the average temperature is always determined over a 30-year period. Now we're running between 1980 to 2010. That's our what's considered the normal.
Okay.
And I think a couple of years ago we talked about how that changed, because it used to be 1970 to 2000, yeah. and then it changed. And that period, of course, is warming up all the time as we were just saying, by global warming. So this winter, we are, during that, in comparison to that 30-year period, we are 10 degrees below normal, 10 degrees Fahrenheit throughout most of the state, below normal for the entire winter. Those 3 month periods.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people are maybe even be surprised that it's only 10 degrees.
Yeah. It's always depressing, when you see the temperatures in Alaska are
warmer than us,
warmer than
something's
us.
Mixed up. It's that cold polar air is the way the circulation pattern's setting up this year is just coming right down over the Midwest.
And we've had in the upper Midwest, the Great Lakes have a lot of ice. Froze more and faster. Does that have any impact on the weather?
In two ways. One is that in the wintertime now, when we get the ice on it, it prevents evaporation. Lake effect snowfall goes down, because a lot of lake effect snowfall is as the weather system moves over the lake, the water, if it's open water, evaporates into the cloud systems and then it precipitates downwind.
Okay.
So that gets cut off. And then that also reduces evaporation in the winter, because the lake ice is, it's thicker than normal because people are walking to the ice caves.
Yeah.
So that, again, because it goes longer, reduces the amount of evaporation. So that helps with the Great Lake water levels, which have been down for many, many years.
So at least that's a positive.
It's a positive, right. That's a positive thing.
Steve Ackerman, our guest, our weather guy right now, you can join in with your questions about the weather, or maybe you've seen an interesting weather phenomena lately or have a question about it. I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. So give us a call, shoot us an email, or post. And frankly, if you've got a cool, we always like the weather photos. We've gotten some dandies on my Facebook page. So if you've got one, please feel free to put it up. There's an old saying that March comes in like a lion, it'll go out like a lamb.
Yeah, well, it's coming in cold.
It ain't coming in like a lamb.
Right, yeah. It's not just moseying on in. It's going to be pretty cold coming around Wednesday again. Well, it's kind of chilly now. I was still in the single digits this morning when I woke up. So we're looking at it. Maybe not so much when I usually think of in like a lion, out like a lamb. I think of coming in very stormy.
Yeah, with big snowstorms.
Storms and things like that, right? And now I'm thinking about, well, it's coming in cold. I don't know if a lion is cold or maybe, in like a polar bear. And hopefully out like something that's warm.
I've been doing these runs in the morning at around 5. I get up and go. And
ooh, nose hair is freezing, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but actually, there hasn't been, there's not a lot of wind. That hour. Is there a reason for the fact that there's not a lot of wind?
A lot of times if you get up early in the morning, you'll notice that it's calm. And then as the day goes on, particularly in the summer, it doesn't happen quite as much when there's snow on the ground. But as the surface gets heated up, that begins to generate vertical circulations. And that brings air that's up above and moving down to the ground. So that's why, early in the morning, it's usually very calm. And then in the afternoon, the winds generally pick up.
Yeah. Yep. Charlie in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Charlie. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I was, when you talked about the weather temperature in Wisconsin and everything, I was just thinking, why are we no longer using the term global warming and instead are using climate change? And I had recently heard that a lot of the computer models that had to do with quote unquote climate change or global warming turned out, have turned out to be false, and that these models are continually being updated and the dire circumstances just don't seem to be occurring. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Yeah. So if we're going to be talking about temperature in particular, I'll use the word global warming because we're talking about temperature. But as it turns out, of course, it's not just the temperature that's changing. There are many other things that are then associated with it with regard to precipitation, with regard to snow cover. And so when we talk more general terms, I like to use the term global change because it just encompasses more than just the temperature. And then the other thing that I wanted to add with regard to his question about changing is that, as we project out, to 50 years and 100 years or so, we have to make certain approximations about relationships between objects. For example, we may assume that if you change ice cover, land temperature may change linearly. And we may use that in the models, and we do a prediction. But then as we do more research, we may realize that change is not linear, that it may be some other function. And so we'll want to go in and make that approximation to improve it. So as time goes on, we tend to improve those models. And those models, as we then do the predictions, we also look at how they predict current existing conditions and then, see whether or not that model improvement helped or not.
So lots of different things going
on. They are. They're very complex. They're very complex models,
okay.
As you would expect, because weather is complex.
Steve in Kewaunee. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for the call. Here's one for you. There's you also cover underground in the weather. So here's one for you. We're told in Kewaunee to run our water because the frost is down towards 4 feet deep.
Yeah.
Now, somebody recently told me that during a brief warm spell, the frost will go deeper, and I wondered if that was true or not.
There's no reason.
I can't imagine why physically that would happen. If it suddenly gets warmer in the atmosphere, that's going to warm the surface layer, assuming that there's no snow cover on it. I don't see how it would cause the snow down, the frost level to go deeper.
Now doesn't the temperature change sort of right at dawn?
So at just after dawn, the temperature does go up.
It actually,
as soon as the sun rises, the temperature continues to drop. You need to get the sun high enough that it's going to warm the surface. But again, I don't think that would impact the frost line.
That would have no impact.
In fact, the more I think about it, the more I think I don't see how it could happen because when you get to that depth, it just changes very slowly.
Right. So I'll just consider it a wives' tale.
Yeah, right.
All right, great. Thanks, Internet.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bill in Monona, hello to you.
Oh, thank you. Great program as always, gentlemen. I just want to, before I ask my question, I want to respond to the last guy asking about the difference between climate change and global warming.
Mm.
Well, from what I heard from a scientist, he said global warming is 1 degree Celsius that the whole planet warmed up, and that's why Russia, Canada, and the U.S. are battling about these ship canals that are now opened up in the North Pole, and that global warming caused these extreme climate changes, like you're seeing drought in California and you're seeing floods in England.
Yeah, that's a good point to remember the phrase global, because I know people are saying we're having such a cold winter, how could global warming be real? But it's like, well, yeah, it's global. We're not talking about regional.
Yeah, so my less serious topic is I wanted to save and harvest all this beautiful snow we have and use it to water my plants. So what is the, I mean, I'm not in school anymore, so I forgot how this works. So what's the ratio of snow to water? Because I have an old water softener container that I wanted to just, you know.
Fill it up, huh?
So, oh boy. So, John just came in, so I'm going to tell you what I think, and then we'll see what John does. So normally, people generally, and I think we only do it because of math, or at least I only do it because of math, we think of the snowfall ratio of 10 to 1. But that very much is dependent on the type of snow you have, which is a function of temperature and how moist the air is. I think in our region, the average is more like 13 to 1.
Yeah.
But,
and John Martin, what do you think?
That's probably right. And I think there might also be that if it sits around for a long time, it changes substantially.
That's what I was going to say. So if you're digging it off of your lawn and putting it in someplace, then it's going to get really compact.
Yeah, don't have high hopes for that ratio, I'd think.
Right, yeah. And don't hurt your back lifting it
up.
And,
thank you.
Yeah, what you could do is just pile it up. Get your snowblower and pile it up in the area that you want.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the easiest way to
Although you could really dig up your lawn, too, if you're not careful.
We are taking a look at climate and weather with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, and John Martin, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the UW-Madison. And they will be with us right up until 12:30 today. Questions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Back after the news. There is never a shortage of things to talk about with the weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. They tell us what we've been experiencing and what's on the horizon weather-wise, and they make us a whole lot smarter in general, at least for me.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
It could go the other way.
Yeah, John's a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences, UW. Well, Steve, you are too, aren't you?
Yep.
You're also director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies.
Right. Otherwise known as SIMS.
It's a pleasure, as always, to have you guys with us.
Yes, always great to be here.
You know, and I do want to go back. You kind of were touching on this earlier, but despite the desperate cold this winter in North America, it has been unusually warm across the whole hemisphere. This is of special interest because global warming skeptics have latched onto this cold and snowy weather as proof that global warming is a hoax.
Right.
So how do you respond to that?
Well, it just isn't a comprehensive view. One has to, if you're going to get into that battle and that fight, you have to take a really comprehensive look at what it means to be warmer or colder than normal. And colder than normal can be regional, or it can be hemispheric. And I think if you don't look at the hemispheric view, you're not really honestly assessing the problem. It has been unusual here in North America. That's really interesting, and it's a problem in science that I'd like to solve. I'm working on it right now. What is the circumstances that led to that? But it's in the context of a way warmer than normal wintertime for the Northern Hemisphere, and that is the proof that the climate signal lurks in the background, and the day-to-day weather is what drives what you experience.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see. You know, one of my friends, Charles Franklin, who now directs the Marquette Law School poll, he told me, in March of 2012, when we had that 5 days over 80, he asked a question in one of his polls about, do you think there's global warming going on? And he's going to ask it again in an upcoming one after this winter and kind of see what's going on.
Yeah.
Because we've long contended, we have a lot of conversations about this, we've long contended that people's experience of the weather day to day is what determines whether or not, if they're not really following the issue, determines whether or not they have a sense that the scientists have got the right answer about global warming. And, of course, that's not quite – that's cherry-picking. It's not fair.
Yeah. Well, even though Donald Trump said that global warming doesn't exist, we don't can't believe him.
No, I wouldn't believe him.
No. That's for sure.
I wouldn't believe him.
You might not believe him
And
anyway.
If you do, he probably has a bridge to sell you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or, well, something else with a bridge.
Oh, man. Amy in Superior, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm just wondering, normally every spring and even sometimes into the summer, we have temperatures that are cooler by the lake, and I'm wondering if the significant ice cover on the lake this year is going to either enhance or prolong that effect. I can take my answer up here.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm sure that it will, because the ice will stay on there for Lake Superior, I think, is almost 90% covered with ice.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's pretty thick, so it's going to take a while for it to go away, to melt. And so the water temperatures are probably going to stay colder.
They certainly
whether or not
will.
You'll actually notice it.
Compared to a prior year.
Compared to a prior year, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I would guess, though, that let's say this. If you could alert yourself to conditions on which your lake breeze is going to develop, and you kept track of that from the last two or three summers in a row, and then you keep track of it for this summer, it would be colder this summer.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. The lake breeze will have more impact.
Yeah, so I think you'll have to measure it. I don't think, just going by what we're talking about, what you feel like, you may not feel that it's going to be all that colder.
Well, we'll keep track.
Yeah.
We'll keep track.
Yeah, see what
you guys,
it looks like.
You're not leaving me, are you? You're going to
stay? No. In fact, I think we should take a field trip up to Superior.
Yeah.
Take a look at it.
Spend the whole summer in Bayfield.
Yeah, I could do that.
Well, I'll be in Bayfield, as a matter of fact, the week of May 16th.
That's just about at this the winter solstice for them.
It's actually Bayfield in bloom, and the tulips and the spring flowers will be busting out all over, and I'll be bustling right through Bayfield. And
boy, that's terrible. I feel bad for you.
At the Bayfield Pavilion, and there'll be hundreds of people there, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
So we'll have to talk to you after that to see if there was a late bloom, given
that's right.
Because tulips
are
very sensitive. I mean, if you're next to the house, it turns out it doesn't matter too much.
Right.
But if you're out in the middle of a field, the cooler, the lower, deeper frost lines may prevent a little bloom, an early bloom.
Well, you'll have to remember to ask me that question.
I'll ask you.
Last week of May. Pat and Maze of Maney. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm just wondering if, we used to hear about nuclear winter. I'm just wondering if the Fukushima power plant reactor nuclear releases in Japan could have had any impact on the weather, and if that's like just in their local area or whether it's as far away as this hemisphere or whatever.
Sure. What do you think?
Yeah, the nuclear winter hypothesis had more to do with the suspension of aerosol and smoke particles from large fires that would have ensued after a major nuclear confrontation than it does with nuclear power itself. So the Fukushima plant disaster has a lot of other, sort of environmental disasters that it's contributed to, I think, locally and maybe even regionally. But I don't believe there was very much fire and smoke and ash that came out of that event. And consequently, I think it probably doesn't fit into even the small-scale example of the nuclear winter scenario, which was talked about a lot in the 80s.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Got a couple of questions online regarding the polar vortex. Somebody wants to know what the heck is the polar vortex, and then Bob from Kewaunee wants to know how many more polar vortexes we have to deal with this winter.
Well, that's a good question. Two good questions. Polar vortex is not a word that was introduced in January of 2014. I mean, we should get that clear right away. This has been a term of art in our science for, 7 or 8 decades easily. And what happens is as the hemisphere gets colder in the wintertime, the jet stream that exists around the hemisphere creeps equatorward a little bit. And every place poleward of the average position of the jet stream is known as the polar vortex. It's the circulation around the pole. And it is dependent on where it's cold and where it's warm. But what it's taken on, meaning this winter, is really been local cold pools that have broken out of this vortex structure and kind of migrated with extreme temperatures to places where they have migrated quite often in the past, but it just doesn't happen every year. And I think that's probably where some of this, I'd say it's a little bit of media hysteria about this word has kind of latched in. But it's been desperately cold, and we've definitely had broken off portions of cold air that have found their way over the Great Lakes states. And we have another one coming Wednesday and Thursday. It's on the way right now. We'll have some of the coldest temperatures a mile or so above the ground on Wednesday and Thursday than we've had all winter long.
Oh.
It won't translate to quite as desperately cold to the ground because the sun's at a higher angle in the sky and other things have ameliorated since then. But it's going to be pretty cold on Wednesday and Thursday. But I was just talking about this in class. We're at the end of the line. You can't produce these cold air masses anymore.
Right, the sun's coming up.
The sun's coming up, and that is the key thing.
The solstice is on the way.
Yeah, it's all over. You know, put a fork in it. We might get a cold Wednesday and Thursday, but it's over.
Yeah, but it's going to be a really pain in the butt.
Oh,
cold.
Yeah, no
it's
doubt.
It's going to be a
no
cold
doubt.
Cold. Perhaps setting a new minimum temperature record?
It could be. Yeah. It could be.
Yeah. But it's coming to an end. Just enjoy the sunlight.
That's right. That's right. It's really nice to walk out in the sun.
David recently heard an interview with a professor from UW-Milwaukee that we're actually in a cooling period.
Globally or something?
Certainly not globally. But
I wonder.
I mean,
no,
we're in a cooling period right now regionally.
Yeah.
For the winter. I mean, I wouldn't carry it out to the summertime.
All right. Ron in Trempealeau County, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah. Response to the guy who called in about the ground continuing to freeze after it starts warming up. I may just be a dumb farmer from Trempealeau County, but I know that that's not an old wives' tale. And the reason that it happens is that the ground cools, and there's a temperature gradient in the frozen ground that that's colder than the atmosphere, and continues to radiate outward even if the temperature above the soil is still warm. So you got sub-zero soil temperatures down there that continue to conduct heat away from the thawed ground below. And my pipes are frozen, and a lot of my neighbors' pipes are frozen after it starts warming up. So don't leave your water running.
Yeah. So maybe I misinterpreted his question. I thought his question was, I see what you're saying. When the air warms up, the cold from below can keep that ground near the surface still frozen. But does it make the frost depth go deeper into the soil?
It does. The soil continues. Well, water freezes at 32, and if the soil is below zero, it's going to continue.
It's going to continue to go down. Okay, independent of what the atmosphere is doing.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. The atmosphere is insulated from what's going on down there by all the soil and all the snow that's on top of it.
Right, right.
The frost may not get any colder, but it's going to continue to radiate, absorb heat from the unfrozen soil below it while it's warming up.
Right, yeah. Right.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes some sense.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the call. We had something else kind of going along with this. Vern and Fenimore. Let's go to Vern. Hi, Vern. Thanks for calling.
The fellow who just called has answered my question.
Okay. All right. There we go. Mark in Green Bay, then. We'll go to you. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I'd like you to comment on a phenomenon that I saw during the full moon of January. I was out front watching it come up, and full vault of the sky was clear. Went into the house to get my wife to have her look at it. And in the intervening minute or so, the entire vault of the sky became cloudy. Well, I went out again about a half hour later, and it's completely clear. I stayed out for 4 hours, and it went through recensions of clear to cloudy, high haze, about 8 or 10 times over that four-hour period. And it wasn't like the haze blew off. It just dissipated. So at the time, there was a low pressure over southern Michigan. There's another low pressure over north-central Minnesota, and I'm wondering what kind of a wave phenomenon or whatever would set it up that the whole atmosphere would go from completely clear to hazy over such a short period of time.
Boy, that's a good
question.
I mean,
with a storm over Michigan makes me wonder if you didn't get some kind of a I don't know, fog banks or something at mid-levels over the lake that kind of got blown in to the bay and then got blown out again. But you say it just dissipated, but without that, I don't know what to tell you. That seems, I wish I could have seen it myself, and maybe I'd have an idea.
Well, my thought was that there might have been higher atmospheric waves that would depress part of the atmosphere and there'd be a condensation, and then at the trough of the wave, it'd release the pressure on it. The fog might evaporate.
There are waves, there are gravity waves that occur in the atmosphere that sometimes have that characteristic, but they wouldn't probably change the complexion of the entire sky.
Right.
That's the thing. You know, these waves have very reasonably small crest to trough wavelength. And so if you had a clear sky and a gravity wave event comes by, you'd see part of the sky have clouds, and you'd probably actually see it ripple too. You'd probably actually watch it doing that. But not the whole sky. That's the thing that's odd to me.
Yeah, that's the whole vault of the sky.
It makes me think that's not a wave phenomenon.
Huh?
It makes me think it's not a wave phenomenon.
It's more like a pulsing disturbance,
right,
kind of
yeah.
like you get this in the foothills a lot, where the wind shifts a little bit and the fog comes right up against the mountains
and then
it sloshes back out again.
Yeah.
You need something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks.
Bit of a mystery. Yeah, thanks, Mark. Thank you for calling.
He stumped us.
Yeah. Well, you can join in, too. Just try and stump the weather guys here at 1-800-642-1234. John and Boaz. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, gentlemen. I have a question. I have some property here on southwest Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I got some huge white oaks, red oaks. But how can the wind come in up the valley onto the hills and twist a 2.5-foot diameter red oak tree in half? How can the wind do that? That's my question.
I think when did this just happen recently, and that's why it's kind of curious to you, or is this just something?
Yeah,
okay.
Recently. And there was no tornado forecast, no hurricanes, of course.
Yeah. Well, we had the hail the other day here in town.
Yeah.
Was it Thursday or Friday or Wednesday or Thursday?
I think it was Thursday. Yeah, I was trying to get home.
So it was convective. It was convective here on Wednesday, and I would not be surprised if there were some funnel clouds involved in some of that. There were 12 tornadoes in Illinois that day. It was a wild day. It was an unusual February day, and so it's quite possible that a undetected, unreported wind gust or straight line wind type of thing could have done that. It's possible, but I would say unlikely and very much worthy of investigation.
Yeah.
There we go. Thank you for calling. That was interesting. Tom and Jackson, hello to you. Hi.
Hi. I had heard a few months ago on NPR that the solar scientists were concerned about the sun, and I thought, what are they talking about? And then they are saying that the solar activity is about half of what it should be in this part of the cycle, and that they were wondering if that may be why things are cooling down. And I was wondering if your scientist there would have an idea. And also, the solar shift of the magnetic fields was delayed a year, and it didn't happen until this past December. And I wonder if they knew about that, too.
Yeah, the sunspot cycle has been really interesting in the last, I'll say, through the last cycle and a half, because when it was expected to come up in the early 2000s, the number of sunspots stayed really flat, really low. I don't even know if it was even zero. And then it picked up in around 2010, I think, 2011. The sun got pretty active for a while. I didn't realize that it is back to a below normal type activity than we would expect it in its 11-year cycle that it goes through. Yeah. But the impact is generally higher up in the atmosphere, in the ionosphere, in the mesosphere, in terms of the weather, and I'll put that in quotes, that occurs up there, and doesn't impact too much the troposphere where we live. There's been statistical studies that show there's a 22-year cycle that tends to align with the 11-year sunspot cycle in terms of number, but then, as you were indicating, they kind of switch magnetic poles every other cycle, so we often think of it as a 22-year cycle. But nobody's been able to explain physically why such a correlation might occur.
Hmm.
And so that still seems to be elusive to us. There's been a couple of really good theories recently, or at least seem to hold up with regard to cirrus clouds and nucleation of them, but physically, again, it's still pretty hard to explain. Hmm.
Plus, it hasn't been cooling down.
Well, that's right, too. Yeah.
That's the other
right,
thing. Yeah. You know, that just hasn't been cooling down. We had a warmer than average winter over the hemisphere by a long shot.
Can I mention something else, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I had done some research on these sun cycles, and between like 1650 and 1715, the sun like flatlined, and it there was no cycles. And in that time, the world's climate cooled down enough where they called it a mini ice age.
Yeah, the Maunder Minimum is called.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I think in the early 2000s, when it was flattening out, people were wondering, what are we going back to that kind of period? But
yeah, interesting.
Clearly
Thank
it
you.
Didn't happen.
Thanks a lot, Tom, for calling. We had something here that I wanted to bring up. We were talking about warm and so forth. Don emailed and said, please remind listeners that January of 2014 was the 347th consecutive month of above average temperatures.
Globally.
Globally.
Globally, right. Yeah.
Yeah, globally.
Right. Yeah. So, certainly not here.
No, but globally.
Yeah. And so, that's an important point, that when we talk about global warming, we have to think globally. You can't talk regionally.
Yeah, that word global is there for a reason.
Reason, right.
Mary in Hewitt. Hi.
Hi. I wondered if your two weather scientists had heard that they're saying the polar vortex is existing this year because a lot of the Arctic waters, the ocean, have become less ice covered. And that's why the vortex is coming straight down.
Yeah, so the Arctic Ocean melt, is that causing?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a theory that's being debated right now. My sense is that's not the answer. I think that to communicate the lack of sea ice in a slightly warmer Arctic at the surface layer to substantially changing the wave phenomena in the middle latitude atmosphere in the wintertime is a stretch.
Okay.
But it's not impossible. It's not implausible. It's just, I think it's a stretch. I think there are other things that must be going on, but we're trying to come up with alternative hypotheses that hold a little bit more of the water, no pun intended. I think that's okay. Just a little bit of a stretch.
All right.
That's what I had read. I read it in Time Magazine or another magazine.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of popular press right now, but it's I think it's a little bit off the mark. Yeah.
All right. Okay, thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. We have, think about forecasting. You guys, what are we looking forward to the rest of the winter and into the spring? You guys,
the rest of the winter, it's going to be cold.
Yeah,
because that ends at the end of the week.
Man, he's going out on a limb.
Finally making a forecast.
Yeah. I guess I don't know. I've been so interested in watching what's happened in February. We're about 10 degrees below normal for the month of February.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since we've had a double digit below normal month.
Well,
I don't
January.
Even know the last time. I think it was about 8 degrees.
Oh, was it? I thought it was
didn't
below.
Get to 10, okay. But I might be wrong about that. But it's been a long time.
Yeah,
if January was the first one, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
So March is coming in. In a way, it's coming in like a lion because it's cold.
It's going to be bitter the first couple of days of March. Yeah.
But it's not. We're not going to get a bunch of snow.
Doesn't look like
stormy,
snow, no. It looks like cold
in the first couple of days.
Maybe
parts of the state.
A little snow on Saturday, looked like. A little bit of light snow in the southern part of the state, but nothing serious, but cold.
Like a puny lion, then.
Yeah. not a house cat.
Oh, man. Well, we have one more quick comment here from Dennis. The oscillating jet stream. I guess we did cover that. Is whether or not it's a symptom of global warming, but I guess we kind of really covered that, didn't we?
Yeah, the jet is so much more complicated than the public media the media portrays it. It's not fair what's happening this winter. Yeah. Too much of this stuff's going on. We got to set the record straight.
Yeah, I mean, in the 70s, late 70s, we had this kind of weather.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
The ice sheets were not as minimal as back then as they are now.
That's
for
right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now,
that's right.
Always a pleasure, you guys. We'll see you the last, end of March.
Yeah.
All right. The
I'll be just back from Hawaii.
We'll feel so bad for you.
I know. We will.
Going to Hawaii with several Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. Looking forward to that. And getting out of town. Oh, man. Well, they'll be back the last Monday of March. and by they, I mean Steve Ackerman and John Martin from the UW-Madison Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. And it's always great to have the weather guys. And they will be back. And just take a look at tomorrow. Oh, Phil Pelletieri, our entomologist, who's getting ready to retire. He's joining us tomorrow here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.